Each Tuesday, we'd like to have a little bit of a look at a couple of the great programs you'll find here on 2SER that all encourage you to think. There's Think Health, there's Think Sustainability, and what we're talking about today, Think Digital Futures. Ellen Liebeder is a presenter and producer of it. A very good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
How are you?
Good, good.
What are we chatting about with Digital Futures
today?
Well,
you know, just a nice light topic for this morning, quantum computers.
Now, do you need me to do a Justin Trudeau and eruditely explain what quantum computing
Look,
is?
Look, I'd be interested to know how much you know about quantum computers.
Look, I know that the concept of it is that in a normal computing system, we talk about binary. So mm-hmm. it's based on transistor switching from way ago that's either off or it's on. And that's where we get the one and the zero. But when you're talking about qubits in quantum computing, you're talking about something that can exist in both states, heightening how quickly processing can occur.
That's very impressive. So you've got it pretty much right. So what you're talking about there, so binary is one and zero, but quantum computers have a superposition, so it's a one and a zero. So in essence, you can have computers communicating in ones, zeros, and a one and a zero. So there's kind of like, I like to think of it as three methods of communication is how I break it down. But so quantum computers is something that we've done a little bit on Think Digital Futures. And so what I want to talk to you is what happens post-quantum computers.
Ooh.
So depending on who you listen to, 5 to 10 years or 2030 is where we're looking at for quantum computers. So it's pretty much going to happen.
It's going to happen. Hey, 2030 is 5 to 10 years. That's terrifying.
Oh, well, that's just how bad my maths
that's
is. You know,
really
sometimes you just get stuck in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
So it's coming. And one of the things that UTS actually is working on is the quantum software to go with the computer.
I hadn't even thought about that. It's going to require a completely different way of writing software.
Yeah, exactly. So we've the language that we use to put software into computers at the moment has evolved, but it's evolved quite slowly. So I think the example that Professor Michael Blumenstein gave me, which you'll hear from him in a moment, is the Atari console. So it started pretty basic, you had to code the software onto the hardware, whereas now we're kind of at that stage where the hardware and software are quite separate. And that's what when we start with quantum computers, we want to make sure that, you know, we're operating in these systems that we're already used to. So that's what they're working on at the moment, is being able to program quantum computers, which it sounds absolutely
mind-blowing.
Shane, who I present the show with, were both saying that, you know, we can't even code normal computers, let alone quantum computers. But funnily enough, I asked Professor Michael Blumenstein this, are we going to be expected to know how to code quantum computers? Because, you know, coding is the new blue-collar job.
It is.
And here's his response.
Now, I would argue that to understand the underpinning aspects of quantum physics in quantum software coding, you do seem to be needing even a higher level of understanding from an educational point of view. That's not a bad thing, because at the end of the day, it means that, you know, there are more people who are interested in STEM and you know, really advancing knowledge and, you know, contributing to the future society that we're probably going to have. But what I've seen in some of the other people that have been doing quantum software, you know, at the fringes of it in the commercial sense, for example, IBM, they're trying to almost, if I interpret it correctly, provide like a drag and drop scenario for you to code in the quantum space a little bit more easily. So just like coding in the normal sense has become easier over time, I think there are, you know, software packages that will become available that will enable people to not have to know what's going on exactly under the hood to actually do the coding of it.
That is absolutely amazing. Drag and drop quantum coding.
Yeah. If you had told me in high school that I could quantum code, you know, I never would have believed you.
I wouldn't believe you've said it to me now.
Well, you know, let's wait 5 to 10 years and wait and see. So that's a pretty awesome thing about quantum computing, is that hopefully it will be accessible to all and we'll all, you know, be able to immerse ourselves in quantum physics. How exciting. But the other thing that comes with quantum computing that a lot of people are worried about is what's going to happen to encryption, because
yes,
quantum computers are able to solve problems and crack codes at absolutely insane speeds.
Speeds that we actually genuinely can't comprehend.
Yeah, basically. So we used an example in the show that if, you know, you need to make run an errand, and on that errand you need to make 10 stops. Like, you need to go to the shops for one thing, another shop for another, you need to go to the hairdresser, blah, 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 blah. So for a computer to work out the most efficient way for 10 stops, it takes about 400,000 years.
Wow.
Just a normal computer for 10 stops. And at 25 stops, it takes the length of the universe for the computer to work out that efficiency. Like, this is just our normal computers.
All right.
Now.
All right.
Quantum computers will be able to do that in about 13 minutes.
13 minutes?
Yes.
Wow.
Just to give you an idea of speed. So they will be able to crack a lot of encryption because the types of encryption we use now, not to get too technical,
please don't,
but it involves a lot of mathematics, yep, and factors, and, you know, it takes a long time for a computer plus a human to crack these codes in order to get access to your bank account, for example.
Of course.
But quantum computers, used the wrong way, will be able to do this. So I spoke to Vikram Sharma. He's the founder and CEO of Quintessence Labs, about this problem.
As we look into the next 5 to 10 years, we're likely to see the advent of quantum computers. And quantum computers have an ability, through their tremendously increased parallelism, to be able to undo some of the mathematics that's used to protect certain types of ciphers that we use today. So we need to be thinking about mathematical methods or encryption methods which are in some way immune to the advent of vastly greater computational capability that will arise in the next 5 to 10 years.
I demand that it become known as quantum crime, because that sounds really sexy.
Yeah, that is pretty sexy.
Yeah, quantum,
and you know,
crime.
What they're also calling it at the moment? The Y2Q.
So, Y2Q.
So it's a bit of a play of Y2K, but years to quantum.
Years to quantum, Y2Q.
Yeah, so that now the race is on for both quantum computers, first and foremost, but quantum programming and also quantum-resistant encryption is the next big thing as well.
It is on. Ellen, where can people find out a little bit more on Digital Futures?
You can head to 2SER, search in shows for Think Digital Futures, or you can subscribe to Think Digital Futures on your favourite podcast app and tune in on Sundays and Tuesday nights.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too, Nick.
We're going to talk more Think programming this time next week.